So to look at all the different aspects of desire, looking at the dangers of desire, looking at the opportunities in desire. And it's important to look at all this instead of having a simplistic idea about desire. And I think some people who become Buddhist practitioners develop simplistic ideas about desire. Desires are bad, you shouldn't have desires. You find Buddhists who say you should have no desire. The Buddha never said that. And in fact, the Buddha taught that once you get once you understand the opportunity of practice, of a spiritual practice, the opportunity of freedom that's possible, he says, you should arouse strong desire for practice. Rather than shunning desire, being shy from it, saying, well, you know, desire is bad and you should kind of dance around the edges of it, and I don't know how you're going to manage to do this practice without desire, but practice is really important, but don't have any desire. He actually said you should arouse strong desire. So then it takes a lot of self-study, a lot of wisdom, to understand how to arouse strong desire and how to hold it wisely. I've known a lot of Buddhist practitioners who've held their desire for practice unwisely and have been burnt by it, really burnt badly. So rather than kind of rejecting desire because of some of the problems that can arise from it, I think it's really important to learn how to hold it in wise ways. Now, the people who think that Buddhism gives a bad rap to desire, just across the board, there's a little bit more, we need to give them a little bit more credit than maybe I've given them so far. Because it's very easy to listen to Buddhist teachers, including myself, and get the impression that we think that desire is somehow a problem. And I want to try to explain why that is, beyond what I've said so far. And that is, if you're doing a mindfulness practice, like meditation practice, where you're trying to be in the present moment clearly, fully, lively, fully here. Some people talk about the present moment as being like a razor's edge. If you really want to be here, any movement of desire, not any, but many movements of desire can pull you off that razor's edge. So even if you have a really beautiful desire, say that maybe for example your neighbor is sick, and you're sitting in meditation, and your dedication there is to sit and be present in the moment, and your mind slips off the present moment and begins thinking about wanting to help your neighbor, which is a beautiful thing normally. But if you're going to learn to train yourself to be in the present in that kind of radical way of meditation, in meditation, you have to even let go of those good desires. And all desires, most desires can get in the way of staying in this razor's edge of the present. And sometimes there's almost like a gravitational force pulling us to even wholesome desires. So even good desires, we have to learn how to be able to let go of. Many of them, maybe eventually all of them, but in the right time, in the right place. If you let go, if you think, oh, I'm supposed to give up all my desires all the time, that's a misunderstanding. But if what you're trying to do in the practice, in the moment, is to have this complete presence of mind, you don't want to slip off it, then you need to learn how to let go of desire. If you do this, starting to let go of desire, even the good ones, the wholesome ones, one of the things you might discover is that there's a certain degree, for some people, it can be a degree of drivenness or compulsion even with beautiful desire. That the mind's tendency to grasp or to be addicted or be driven or be pushed can also be there with beautiful desires. And that's really helpful to see, because if you want to become free, you have to be able to have the ability to be free of any desire, good or bad. That's not a judgment on good desires as being bad. It is a judgment on the mind's tendency to get lost or to lose presence. So because of that, when Buddhist teachers sometimes talk, it sounds like, when they're talking about meditation at least, they're kind of saying, you know, desire, let it go. But I think that's an unfortunate message. It's unfortunate to generalize from that. So are you following me still? Okay, should I continue? Okay. One of the challenges around desires is that we can have competing desires. And so that can cause a tremendous amount of stress in our being, in our life. There can be the desire, for example, to eat healthy food. But sometimes the desire for junk food is stronger. And so some people are struggling between different desires. How do we work these? There can also be the desire, for example, to wake up, to be present, to be mindful, to be concentrated. And as I like to joke sometimes, you can sit down to meditate, be on retreat, be practicing really strongly, feel tremendous inspiration. It's because this is like the most important thing in my life. My spiritual life is the most important thing in my life. It's really what I prepared myself to do for many years. I finally have the time for it. It's extremely valuable. I'm so glad I can finally have the time to do it. And you sit down and you're going to do the meditation practice, and your mind starts thinking about what you should have for dinner. It's kind of strange. You have this beautiful, major desire, and the mind goes off on wanting dinner or wanting this or that or this fantasy. And that goes away, carries you away. There's kind of competing desires going on in the mind. So part of practice is to learn to work with competing desires and learn how to be able to have a desire that you want to follow and then to be able to let go of other desires. Even desires that might be good. If you have an overriding desire you want to follow through on, sometimes you have to let go of other desires. And so that's just kind of a healthy, normal life. If you want certain things, if you want to be proficient in certain activities in life, you really have to dedicate yourself to it. And in dedicating yourself to it, you have to be able to let go of a lot of other things. You can't do everything. So desires are something that anybody who practices mindfulness has to study and understand. That means that you should not read endless books about it. You can read some books about desire and listen to some talks about it. But you're going to get kind of the basic idea, and then you want to study it in yourself. And one of the ways of studying something like this in yourself is not be in a hurry to get rid of something, but rather take the opportunities when desire comes, take the opportunity to look at your desires, understand many different aspects of it. You can understand it physically. What happens in your body physically when desire manifests? Any kind of desire. Is there a leaning forward? Is there a tightening? Sometimes it's very clear on retreats I've been on where I'm sitting very centered and balanced in myself until the lunch bell rings. And then I'm walking to lunch and I'm kind of like ahead of myself, you know, thinking about lunch out there and kind of wanting it and kind of leaning forward a little bit. I've noticed sometimes it's leaning forward. It can happen in the body as the desire kind of begins to operate strongly in the mind. There can be tremendous energy in the body with desire. There can be tremendous fire in the body with desire sometimes. There can be what other things can happen in the body with desire? There's a lot. And the body can get activated. A kind of energy, a field of energy in the body can shift. Center of energy can shift in the body. I sometimes can be sitting and have my energy kind of feeling pretty centered down here. And then certain thoughts and certain desires can arise. And I can feel my energy, my center of gravity, kind of lift as I'm sitting. And then we can study desires in our minds, our brains. What effect does the desire have on our brains and our minds? Does it help the mind become more relaxed and soft, open, spacious? Some desires do that. Or does it make the brain or the mind become more constricted or tight? Sense of drivenness, being with pressure. So you study all this to get to know it, what's going on. And then listening to the voices of desire, the arguments, the beliefs, the listening to when we confuse a desire with a need, which is very dangerous. When you have to simply have a desire, but you're convinced that it's a need. That's interesting. So to look, what are the beliefs connected to it? What's the expectations connected with the desire? If you have this desire fulfilled, what do you think is going to happen? Some people have never really looked seriously at their expectations around desire. They think it's a good thing to have, but they don't really understand what they're trying to fulfill in getting the desire. And sometimes what they're trying to fulfill cannot be fulfilled in the way they're trying to do. If you're feeling lonely and go to the refrigerator to eat, the desire for food is not really going to help the emptiness of loneliness. So there's kind of a misplaced attempt to kind of satisfy something and what's satisfying. So I want to suggest four different ways of working with desire in meditation practice. One way is not to study it. One way is to ignore it. And that's actually a wise thing to do sometimes. And rather than, and in ignoring it, one way, the wise way to do it is to redouble your efforts in practice, to have stronger efforts, stronger intentionality around paying attention to the breath, paying attention to the present moment. And the more you can put your attention onto something wholesome, something useful like the breath, and get concentrated, the less the food of attention is available to go into the desires. So you just redouble your efforts. Put your effort, and then if you redouble your efforts, perhaps the desire will fade away. Your interest in it will go away. Another approach is to investigate the object that you desire. And in Theravada Buddhism, the Buddhism of Thailand and Sri Lanka, this is often a recommendation. You study the object that you're desiring. And to see, is it really worth it? Is it really possible to fulfill the expectation you have? Sometimes it is worth it, and sometimes it's not. So, is it going to provide you with a kind of happiness that you're hoping it'll provide? So, if you think having a new car is going to make you happy, so you want that new car. Look at that and really look honestly. Is that really going to create happiness, a new car? And I think most people would say that cars don't create lasting happiness. In fact, a new car might make you less happy than your old car. Because the old car, you never had to worry about if someone bumped into it, scratched the bumper. And you can just leave kind of, you know, leave it and parked, and you don't have to even remember to lock it because no one's going to take that car. You feel so free. But now you have this new car, and suddenly you're not free. Did I lock it? Did I park it at the right place? Oh, you know, I have to park so no one can scratch it. So to study the object of desire. The third way, and this is really the interesting one, I feel, and also I think the one that has more lasting value, is to not look at the object of desire, but when there is desiring and wanting happening, that you want to become free of, find, so you're not caught by the desire, driven by the desire, is you take your attention, which is focused on the object of what you want, and you turn your attention 180 degrees around to look at what it feels like to be desiring, to look at the subjective experience of being someone who has desire. What does it feel like for you to want? Forget about what you want. What does it feel like to want? And this is some things I talked about before. What does it feel like physically? What's it feel like emotionally? What's it feel like mentally and cognitively? What's it going on? Study it. Look inside. Especially those kinds of desires that come with compulsion and drivenness. Can you go feel that pressure? Bring your careful attention. Where is the pressure? Can you hold that pressure very gingerly, very carefully, tenderly in your awareness, and in holding it, not be caught by it? Our relationship desire changes radically if we stop looking at the object of desire and look at what it feels like inside of us. Some people will decide that some things that we want are not worth the cost of what's happening, for us internally by the drivenness that it comes with. So really feel that desire. Feel it inside. If there is compulsion or pressure, even for good desires, healthy desires, Buddhism says you'll still suffer as long as there's some element of thirsting or craving or clinging with it. So use your practice to clarify that compulsion and try to free yourself from it. And then, when you're going to act on the wholesome desire, you'll act much wisely, more wisely. And then the fourth, I said there were four things you could do. You could ignore it. You could study the object and the desire and see if it's worth it. See if you understand it properly. The third one is you can turn around and look at the nature of desiring. And the fourth one is very interesting. And some people can get this, and it just makes all the difference in the world. Some people can get it, but they can't quite sustain it. And some people can't get it at all, what I'm about to say. It doesn't matter if you don't get it. But what I'll try to use is an analogy. Have you ever gone to a movie or watched television and been engrossed in the movie that you're watching? You can forget you're in a movie theater, forget television, just in the story. And then something happens, and you kind of wake up and you realize you're in a movie theater. There's lights flickering on the screen, and there's this curtains on the side, and people around you, and they're munching the popcorn, and the seats are uncomfortable, and you're in this place, and this thing happening on the screen, and you realize it's just flat, white, that they're kind of projecting these lights on. You can look up and see the light coming through, and suddenly the magic or the seduction or the kind of involvement, the immersion in the world of the movie, the spell has been broken. So hopefully some of you had that experience. If you haven't, go to a really good movie and then set a timer, maybe a random timer or something. You get a vibrating timer so that you don't bother the other people. And then like every 5 minutes or 10 minutes in the movie, have it go off. And then kind of look around. Kind of pull yourself out of the world of the movie and find yourself separate and distinct, awake. To some degree, most of us can so easily live immersed in the world of objects, in the drama and the stories of our life. What we want, what we don't want, what's happening, what we want, our plans, our memories. The movement to be awake doesn't require anything to change. The movie on the movie screen doesn't have to stop. Nothing has to change, but we can wake up. We can have this movement of the mind, which takes no effort. Does it take effort? But to kind of somehow get the overview, bird's eye view, or have the mind be independent. Find that place where the mind is not pulled in and lost in what you're looking at, what you're involved in. To be awake instead of what I'm trying to say here? Awake instead of
emerged.
What are some other words?
Enchanted.
Instead of enchanted? What else?
Identified.
Identified with? So awake instead of what else?
Sucked in.
Any other options?
Dreamy,
mesmerized, caught up in. Asleep. So one way of working with desire, and it's kind of a little bit similar to the third type of kind of turning around and looking at the nature of desiring itself, but that is to wake up. To somehow recognize, see, feel, tune into, touch the nature or the quality of the awareness which is knowing. The awareness which knows the desire. The awareness which knows that you're practicing. The awareness that knows that you know. The awareness. The awareness itself, if you kind of get a sense of the awareness. Another analogy, which is maybe, I don't know, so good, but have you ever been through a car wash in your car and stayed inside the car? You know, and you feel kind of peaceful and safe inside, and all this whirlwind of foam and rollers are happening, and you're kind of like watching. I don't know if that's a good one. So the fourth option is to wake up to it all. Now the opportunity in learning to be free, discovering how to be free of desire. Not free from desires. I don't want people to become free from desires. Like, you never have a desire again. Walk out of here today, you'll never have a desire again. You end up peeing in your pants, probably. Some desires are helpful, useful. But you understand, right? Instead of getting rid of desire, not having desire anymore, having them but being free of them, their allure, their pull, their compulsion. So desire can arise, and you can look at it, recognize it as a desire, and then have the ability to choose. Yes, I'll follow this. No, I won't follow this. For some people, desires are a dime a dozen. If you're going to follow every one of them, you'll just get sick. But if you can learn, oh, that's useful to do, I think I'll follow that, then I won't follow it. So if you learn to be free of from desire, right, then it can make room in our psyche, in our hearts and minds, for us to be able to live from the beautiful desires, from the healthy ones. And in fact, I think that the more awake and free we become, the more we tend to tune into the beautiful desires, the desires of compassion, the desires of kindness, the desires of liberation, desire for freedom to be awake. I think these are innate in the heart, and the heart which has been purified to the degree that is no longer sucked into compulsions has much greater access to these beautiful desires. So I'm going to end now, but I should have said this. I should have inserted this earlier in the talk. So you can, in your mind, you know, remember the talk and then insert it near the beginning. So that it follows a natural flow. To develop some respect for the power of desire, all you need to do is meditate. Try to meditate. Try to sit down and stay in the present moment. And you'll see how difficult it is to be present. We have this tremendous drive, drivenness, compulsion to think and be carried away by it. Part of it is because we want to think. Sometimes people are... And sometimes we want what we're thinking about. In some way or other, we want what we're thinking about. To become really free of desire becomes equivalent to being able to choose whether or not you're going to follow a train of thought. A thought arises, and you can just let it go. That the nature of thirsting and clinging and desire is also found in such a subtle place as even the way in which many of us think. So it's very deeply ingrained, not just about desires for cars. So as we get a handle on even that's those deeply ingrained, rooted, subtle desires, like even desire to think, we get into looking at then the desires to be, desires to wanting to have a certain identity, a self. It's not an easy thing that I'm talking about. But the whole process, each step along the way, is valuable. And I hope that maybe for this next week or next life, that you, based on this talk, you become interested in investigating, studying, understanding your desires better. And note, all I said was study, investigate your desires. I did not say become free of them. I'm content if you study them really well. And partly I know that if you study them really well, you will become free of them. So, is that okay? So, thank you very much.